But right now we continue our series here on Mooney Goes Wild for the month of July. Each week we hear from a leading voice on what has become the defining global challenge of our time, and that is climate change.
The real banks of the world are seed banks. I mean, you can't eat money, but you can eat seeds, and the seeds produce the crops. So it's so fundamental how plants respond to climate change, because they are our food, they are our fuel, and they're also most likely one of the most important solutions to get us out of this mess that we've caused, climate change.
Professor Jennifer McIlwain is a paleobotanist. Paleo means old, and botany is the study of plants. So she studies fossil plants, many of them older than dinosaurs. These ancient plant remains not only tell us a great deal about climate change in the past, but can provide critical clues and warning signs for the future. Chair of Botany at Trinity College Dublin, Jennifer works on the Programme for Experimental Atmospheres and Climate, or PEAC. The programme simulates a range of environmental conditions, allowing scientists to become time travellers who can then predict how a changing climate will affect the Earth's plant life. Intrigued by such cutting-edge research, Dr. Matthew Jebb, Director of the National Botanic Gardens of Ireland, recently went along to meet Jennifer to see some of her experimental work close up at the School of Biology and Environmental Science in UCD.
I'm standing in a quiet corner of the UCD campus in Rosemount, and we're in an extraordinary glasshouse full of an amazing collection of plants. And I'm here with Professor Jenny McIlwain. And Jenny has spent many years of her research life here at UCD, recently moved to Trinity. Jenny, tell us a bit about the collection of plants we have before us.
So, as you say, we've got a wonderful array of plants here. We've got ancient plants, we've got modern crop plants, all for environmental and experimental research. All the scientists here in Ireland are asking, how will climate change influence the plant world here in Ireland and also globally?
And one of the exciting things about your research, Jenny, has been, you know, you've worked in paleobotany, looking at fossil plants, and today you are looking at climate change. So perhaps you would like to tell us a little about, you know, what got you into paleobotany and how does that illuminate the sort of modern world?
Well, I suppose I think it goes all the way back to being an undergrad, and I remember my lectures at the time describing how plants had changed through time. And as an undergrad, I thought, oh my goodness, everything has a history. Even plants have a history. So we look at what's around us here today in the glasshouse or on a walk through the woods in Ireland today, but you have to think that everything has changed. Time has changed, climate's changed, atmosphere has changed. And as an undergrad, I thought that was really powerful. So my interest in paleobotany is we can learn so much from climate of the past and how it's shaped the environment of the past and plant life of the past. And because in the deep geological past, climates were much warmer than today, more similar to where we're going in our future if we don't change our behaviour, paleobotany really has a lot to give, and we can learn a lot from it to make predictions about what's going to happen in the future.
One of the extraordinary problems that we face in understanding climate change is we live on just one Earth with one history. So to understand what's happened in the past is a great example of the elegance of science, that you can actually take a fossilized plant from 50 or 200 million years ago, and that will tell us about the conditions that that plant grew up in. So, Jenny, can you outline roughly what it is when you dig out one of these fossils? What is it that tells you the world was so different, the climate was so different then?
So, for me, and I think most naturalists, plants are the original sensor. So we have sensors in our watches, we have sensors all around our environment that sense what was the temperature of the environment, what's the atmospheric composition of the environment. But plants do that innately. So if I take a fossil plant, I can actually look at its shape and its structure, its morphology and anatomy. I can look at its chemistry. I can look at the number of stomata, the breathing pores on the leaf surface, and I can actually, from that information, deduce what the climate was hundreds of millions of years ago, and more importantly, what the atmospheric composition was millions of years ago. And this is really important because if we can understand, for example, how much carbon there is in the atmosphere and how warm the temperature of the Earth was, you can begin to understand this relationship of if we burn fossil fuels, how is it going to affect global temperature? Well, we can use information from fossil plants in the geological past to look at that relationship. If you raise carbon dioxide by this much, how much is going to warm globally the Earth's temperature by?
So when you get a fossil plant, and you're talking about these stomata, the little breathing pores on the undersurface of a leaf, what is it about them that tells you the CO2 levels were different?
So carbon dioxide in the air is like, I suppose it's like plant food. And the more carbon dioxide there is in the atmosphere, the more plant food that's available. So plants are very clever. They have a relationship between the number of stomata on the leaf surface and the amount of carbon in the atmosphere. The more carbon in the atmosphere, plants develop fewer stomata. By doing that, they can get the same amount of carbon for photosynthesis, for the production of sugars, but the huge benefit is that they lose less water. So we know from modern studies, experimental work, that if you subject a plant to a high carbon dioxide level, one similar to, let's say, the year 2050, by the time a new leaf has developed on that plant, it will have fewer stomata on the leaf surface than the old leaf did. So we can use, it's a really simple relationship, but it's very powerful, and we can, simply by counting the number of stomata on the leaf and calibrating it, we can estimate really precisely how much carbon dioxide was in the atmosphere 50 million years ago or 200 million years ago.
So at one point in your career, from looking at the distant past, you have suddenly become fascinated by the future of our climate. And this facility here in Rosemount, tell us a bit about how it came about.
Rosemount, it long been on the corner of UCD campus, and probably not a lot of people knew about it, but there's always lots of work going on. And we really built up this great facility, which is a national facility for Ireland. And what it enables plant scientists to do is to simulate climates and atmospheres of any time in Earth history, so the deep geological past or the future. And then experimentally, we can grow our plant of interest, whether it's barley for beer production or cycads, some ancient plant from Mexico, or whatever the plant of interest. We can grow them in these experimental conditions and observe how they change when they're exposed to a different climate or a different atmospheric composition. And when we understand that, it allows us to read those signals in the plants and build up complex mathematical data sets. But in essence, it's basically learning how the plants are adapting to these experimental conditions. And then we can go back to the fossil record and use that information to work out the climates of the past. But I think even more importantly, it allows us to say something of how are plants going to respond in the future if we continue on this path of, I suppose, globalization, burning of fossil fuels, land use change.
So here in this glasshouse, there's a lot of oat plants and barley plants, I can see. What has been the effect, do you think, of if we anticipate continuous rise in CO2 levels, what is going to be the effect upon Irish agricultural crops?
So some of the experiments we've done has shown that typical pathogens, so fungal pathogens of crop plants in Ireland, when you expose them to future climate or future CO2 concentration, the pathogen adapts faster than the crop plant. And the pathogen is boosted under high carbon dioxide. So what that study shows us is that even though plants have the capacity to adapt to future climate change, fungal pathogens which reduce yield can do so faster because they have a shorter lifespan, so they can adapt much faster. So they're always one step ahead of the plant's defences. That's one example. Then on the other side, you may see a boost in productivity. So if you choose the right variety, under a high carbon dioxide world, they'll lose less water. They may show an increase in productivity. But this would be the case in an Irish climate. If you go to the tropics, this wouldn't be the case, because even though carbon dioxide would usually boost the biomass and the growth of the plant, the temperature is going to suppress, because the temperature is going to raise up so much in the tropics, it's going to have a negative impact. So it's really complex, and I suppose it depends where you are.
Like you say, Jenny, it's a very complex question, and one of the things I know that Rosemount features are all these different growth chambers. So it might be nice for us to go and have a look at how these growth chambers are informing this knowledge, this research you're doing.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's go and have a look at those.
So, Jenny, you brought me into an extraordinary room with five big humming green boxes, well numbered, 10, 11, 12, and we're standing next door to number 13. What is this construction?
So this is a plant growth chamber, or you could also call it a simulated climate chamber. So they're wonderful pieces of scientific kit, and what they allow us to do is to take a programme of climate from anywhere in the world today, and to program it into the actual chamber. So, for example, today number 13 is running a Mexican hot, humid climate. So we can control the light, we can control the day-night cycle, we can control temperature, humidity, but most importantly, we can control the atmosphere. So we can simulate an atmosphere from the future or the past, or today, but it really gives us this great experimental control.
So, Jenny, could we have a look inside this particular chamber?
Yeah, let's open it up. So I'm opening up this chamber now, and we can feel this lovely flood of warm 70% humidity air, and the temperature in the chamber is 25 degrees centigrade. So it's a really tropical, and that hiss you've just heard, that's the atmospheric nozzles which are spraying humidity to keep this really high humidity in the chambers.
Very impressive. And all these little seedlings, I see you've got a huge number of freshly germinated things. Well, they're about 20, 30 centimetres tall now. What are these plants?
So these are, they're called mangroves, and there's two different species, black and white mangroves. And these were collected very recently in Mexico from by one of my postdocs, John Devney, and he's funded by the Irish Research Council. And what we're doing with these seedlings is trying to understand how future climate change and future increases in greenhouse gases will affect the native range of these tiny little seedlings, which are hugely important for the people of Senegal, Mexico, all over the tropics, because these are used in their farming and fisheries and for flood defences.
Jenny, thank you for that. That's a fascinating transport into the tropics instantly. Maybe we'll go and look at some of the other chambers here.
Yeah, let's do that. I'm going to close the door now to keep this climate just perfect.
Extraordinary. That was a modern day climate in there, I presume. So we're looking at the same levels of CO2. But one of the clever things about these chambers you were describing is you can set them to the past or the future. Could we have a look at one of the chambers where we're doing such an experiment?
Yeah. So if we walk straight over this lab, over to chamber number 10, in that chamber over there, it's the exact same climate as we've just physically experienced by opening the door. The only thing we've changed is the carbon dioxide content. So we've doubled the carbon dioxide content. So today, this chamber, number 13, has got 400 parts per million. And as we walk over the lab to the other side, that's running at 800 parts per million. So double the modern atmosphere.
Yeah. So, Jenny, we've moved over to chamber 10 here, and I noticed a nice little window that I'm opening up. We can see something very similar to the last lot of mangrove seedlings we're looking at. What has changed here?
So this would be a simulation or an atmosphere that we've simulated for the end of the century based on some of the predictions. And what you see right away is that these little seedlings are actually taller than the ones we saw in the low or modern CO2 concentration chambers. So what we've learned and what a lot of other scientists have learned is it's really potent, carbon dioxide. It changes everything about a plant, and it can change it in positive ways and it can change it in negative ways. And this is really important because different species will respond differently. Some will benefit from climate change, and for some it'll be detrimental. And because you get these different effects, it means that plants perhaps we take for granted are going to become rarer, and other plants that we maybe don't see when we're out walking, they're going to become more dominant.
Well, Jenny, it is extraordinary to see the diversity of work you're doing here, and I think it brings us back to the question of the impact of climate change is clearly going to be fundamental to our world. What do you see from an optimistic point of view as the way that we might tackle some of the problems that we face?
So plants are the sensors of climate change. They tell us what's happening. But really importantly, they are also one of the solutions. So there's many scientists all over the world, including in UCD, TCD, where we're using plants in combination with geology. So, for example, adding ash to crop plants to work out how we can take up carbon from the atmosphere. So they're very much part of the solution, let's say, expanding forestry, growing forests for biomass. And I suppose we have to ask, well, why should we all care? And I think we have to come back to, I think, the real banks of the world. Of course, you all know, Matthew, the real banks are seed banks. I mean, you can't eat money, but you can eat seeds, and the seeds produce the crops. So it's so fundamental how plants respond to climate change, because they are our food, they are our fuel, and they're also most likely one of the most important solutions to get us out of this mess that we've caused, climate change.
And I think it certainly reminds me once again of the sheer importance of plant science and botany in providing for the future an optimistic path, a lot of hope. So thank you very much, Jenny. Fascinating to see, you know, research on a truly fundamental level.
Thank you. It's been great showing you around.
Thanks.
And more details can be found on our website, rte.ie/Mooney. That was the Chair of Botany at Trinity College Dublin, Dr. Jennifer McIlwain, speaking with Dr. Matthew Jebb, Director of the National Botanic Gardens in Ireland.